coming in as Bloom. Here with the exciter net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's get this hour underway. It is Thursday, April 25th. Steinberg and Vickers along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Busy hour on the Sports Drive planned for you. First of all, rest in peace to Bob Cole, who we found out on this Thursday has passed at the age of 90 after a legendary legacy left and an incredible 90 years lived. Rest in peace to Bob Cole as we kick off this hour. And last hour on Flames Talk, spent the second half of the hour on the Daily Flames Roundtable reflecting on the life and legacy of Bob Cole. As the Flames start to undertake their retool here, Vix, first of all, hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick.
We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. As the Flames move forward into next season, as the offseason has begun, this forward mix is very interesting to me. This forward mix that they have going into next year is quite interesting because as of today, Flames have 12 forwards under contract for next season, and that does not include either of Matt Coronato or Jacob Pelche. So they've got 12 forwards under contract. Those two guys are currently on the Calgary Wranglers, who have a 1-0 series lead in their best of three against the Tucson Roadrunners after Wednesday night. They have one pending UFA forward from the group that we saw for most of this season, and that's AJ Greer. There's just, Vix, there is not a lot of flexibility when it comes to this forward group going into next season. They've got a lot of names under contract, and many of us, I think you and I included, we all believe that Pelche, Coronato, these guys should be full-time NHLers next year. It would be best for the organization if those guys are full-time NHLers next year. But that becomes a really interesting exercise with 12 forwards already under contract for next year and a decision to be made on perhaps a 13th and AJ Greer. It's a really interesting look that the Flames have when it comes to their forward group next year, and I'm curious as to how they do go about working some of the younger guys in as they go into next year.
Well, you have that conversation, then you wonder what the Flames might be doing on July 1 and whether or not they're going to be bringing in a center, whether they're going to be looking at other pieces. But you're right, the fact remains that there are 12 forwards as it stands on April 25th that have contracts for next season. And at the same time, you saw two prospects come into the lineup this season and supplant some veterans or supplant some guys that you had in your opening night roster. And lo and behold, here you have this similar situation again when you're talking Pelche and Coronato specifically going, yeah, I think we can unanimously agree if you do unanimous agreements among two people. I mean, I don't know if that necessarily constitutes it,
but we
are both of the belief that Matt Coronato and Jacob Pelche will be full-time members of the Flames next season. So it does leave a little bit of an interesting conundrum for Craig Conroy because, one, first of all, you're not just going to gift them a spot. They still got to go about their business and earn it the right way. You're not just going to earmark a position in the top nine for Coronato, for example, or, you know, identify a spot and go, Jacob Pelche, you know what, no matter what happens, this is yours. So you do have that internal competition, which is good, but at the same time, if it unfolds the way that we think it will, it does give a little bit of roster consideration to Craig Conroy as to, okay, if these guys are in,
right,
how do we make room for them? And by extension, who comes out?
Now, I do think it's important to point out, and I don't want to sound insulting, but I don't think, like for instance, if it goes the way that we think it's going to go and Pelche and Coronato have good camps and they're like, yeah, these guys are on the roster, I don't think a guy like Dryden Hunt, I don't think a guy like Walker Dewar is necessarily going to stand in the way, right? Because the Flames have shown they had no problem healthy scratching those guys. Dryden Hunt spent a good chunk of time in the American League this year. I don't think the Flames would have qualms about putting one of those guys or both of those guys on waivers and having them play in the American League. So I don't know if there's necessarily as much of a roadblock as it might seem on paper for Coronado and Pelche. So I just wanted to bring that part up as well.
Yeah, and respectfully to those two individuals, the Calgary Flames will have more invested in the development and the slotting of Jacob Pelche and Matt Coronado just by way of them being former first-round picks. The thing that is sort of interesting to me in that regard is we saw Matt Coronado in a fourth-line role at the tail end of this past season, and if that's a position where he has to start next year, then so be it. But I don't picture Matt Coronado as a fourth-line player for long. So while you mentioned those two players, Dewar and Hunt, not necessarily being roadblocks to them making the team,
how do you get
Matt Coronado specifically and perhaps Jacob Pelche into that top nine position?
And that is something that I think the Flames are going to have to have big conversations about as this season goes along. And it really... I like what A.J. Greer brought to the team this year prior to that ankle injury or that foot injury.
Absolutely.
I thought he was a really nice find for him. He really found a role and played that role effectively on the right side of Calgary's fourth line. Again, prior to the injury, on Friday at Locker Cleanout, A.J. talked about absolutely wanting to return and felt like Calgary's a good fit for him.
I want to stay here. I think I can bring an element both on the ice and off the ice, with the leadership and the standard that I come into the rink every day and carry myself with. So I'm looking forward to those conversations. But I think it's looking positive, and that's the feeling that I have. So hopefully we can get something done.
So that was A.J. Greer on his future with the Flames, and this was Craig Conroy on Friday, the GM as well.
We want to sit down, have our meeting, see where we're at, but he was great. I mean, he came in and gave us everything that we wanted. He gave us that physical presence. Unfortunately, with the injury, he came back. Even he would say he wasn't feeling 100% like he was before. He didn't have the same explosiveness in skating and so he's got to get healthy, but, couldn't ask for more from what he did for us this year.
Problem is that re-signing a guy like Greer, again, just adds to the conversation of how does a guy like Coronado, how does a guy like Pelche be, so that becomes another body that if other moves aren't made, bringing back Greer would take away some of the potential flexibility you have. So I'm not against bringing back A.J. Greer. I'm really not, because I thought, again, he had himself a nice run before the injury and was a very nice find for him in the role that he was asked to play. But as of right now, he's the only piece of flexibility you have that isn't coming back next year as it stands right now. And I think that I do think you have to take that into consideration as you make some of your other offseason decisions here.
For me, the one thing to also keep in mind, though, is you're going to have 13 forwards on your roster. And is A.J. Greer perhaps amenable to potentially being that 13th forward, knowing that he might not play night in, night out? Because you're not going to want a Pelche, for example, being in and out in that 13th role. You're not going to want a player like Adam Klapka, if he should happen to surprise, playing that role. You'd rather have those guys playing either significant minutes in the NHL or in the AHL, pardon me, or playing actual minutes in the NHL, even if it's 8, 10, 12 minutes. That's where a veteran like A.J. Greer, for me, if he's understanding of the situation and amenable to it, that's where he fits for me. And again, we can talk about whether that could be a Walker Dewar type or a Dryden Hunt type. That still could be that type of player as well. But just from what I saw of A.J. Greer, I don't necessarily bring him back knowing that it will impede one of my young players from getting quality time, but I can see where the fit works for both Greer and for the Calgary Flames.
And then there's other names, like we're talking about Pelche and we're talking about Coronado, but what about Klapka? Is he a guy that can push for a spot? We saw him get some NHL time this year. I know they're really high on a guy like Sam Morton. Is that a guy who's done some real nice things in the American League offensively?
Sandra Persina was very complimentary of him when we talked
earlier this week. So I do wonder a little bit about ways that the Flames can give themselves a little bit more flexibility. And I understand that it's never a bad thing to overdevelop in the American League. But I also think it's important to point out that whether it's goaltending, like Kevin Woodley is going to talk about a little bit later on this hour, or not, the NHL has more and more become a development league. For the longest time, it wasn't. But because of the importance of having guys on entry-level contracts make impacts from a cap perspective, the NHL has moved towards being more of a development league, and it just makes less and less sense for your salary cap sometimes to have guys spend more time in the American League than maybe they would have 15, 20, 25 years ago. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration. I think Pelche needs to play in the NHL. The injuries this year made it so that his season sucked. And what I mean by that, it sucked for him. It was an awful year for him.
Anything that could have went wrong kind of went wrong for Jacob Pelche.
Exactly.
It's a lost year of development at the end of the day, pending how he's able to put together an AHL playoffs run for me.
And I think Coronado needs to be in the NHL next year. I think that learning and developing, especially for a team that is retooling here, I think the NHL reps are now really important for two guys like that. And so then it becomes the other question. We talked about Greer. Are there other ways to make flexibility? Is there another avenue or two the Flames can explore if they're looking to give themselves a little bit more flexibility? Because there are a few interesting names that enter the final years of contracts. Now, one of them we talked about on Wednesday's show in Sharon Govich and the idea of extending him this summer. I still believe that the merits of extending a player like Sharon Govich make more sense to me than those of trading him, but that is a way. There's one guy that you could point to right away that you might be able to move out if that's the way you want to do it and get an asset in. Maybe don't bring in a player right away on the roster, and then that would open up a spot. Same would be true for Kuzmenko. Same would be true for Mangiapane. We've talked a lot about Sharon Govich, so maybe we won't go there because we did that a lot on Wednesday's
show. And he'd be the
show.
Least likely of the three that were, well, of the other two, including Sharon Govich, that I think makes sense to create space using.
So then what about Kuzmenko? And I know how I feel. I don't think it makes any sense to trade Kuzmenko this summer. I think teams are like, okay, what are you? Are you a guy that was in Rick Tocchet's doghouse? Or are you a guy that put up a ton of points in the final
17 and 11, including 9 goals?
So the final eighth of a season, you put up a ton of points. Are you that? Are you the guy in Rick Tocchet's doghouse? Are you somewhere in between? So I don't think you're getting good value for Kuzmenko on the trade market this summer. I think you want to see a little bit more of what he is on your roster before you go definitively any direction with that player. So I don't think moving Kuzmenko makes a ton of sense this summer either.
No, I'll agree with you on that front, unless a team really saw something they liked over the course of those final 11 games of the season that you can convince them to send you A-plus assets in a deal that you just can't say no. And then by extension, you kind of just extrapolate the Elias Lindholm deal and say, hey, we got these bonus assets as a result of taking on Kuzmenko's contract for 3 months of the season. But to me, I think his value is best served returning to the Calgary Flames, seeing how he produces, if he can continue producing. Well, I don't even want to say continue producing at that clip, because that's 128-point pace over an 82-game schedule. I don't think that's realistic at all. But if he can continue to be productive for you as a member of the Calgary Flames early into next season, I think his trade value goes up with that larger sample size.
And then there is the last name that enters the final year of a contract, and that's Andrew Mangiapane, who has 1 year left at $5.8 million, and then he is an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his career. He'll be 29 years old when he hits UFA in just over 1 year's time. Now, this was Andrew when asked on Locker Cleanout Day at the end of last week, on Friday of last week, about his future with the Flames.
You're heading into the last year of your contract. Is Calgary a place you could see yourself long-term?
Yeah, for sure. I think Calgary is honestly a great place to play. I love it here. It's been home for me, my second home, really, right? So we'll see kind of, I guess, what happens here in the future and everything like that. But yeah, definitely like Calgary, and see what happens, right?
So here's the really interesting thing. I don't know what the contract ask is going to be from Mangiapane and his representation, but I wouldn't be surprised if the ask is a bump on the $5.8 million that he's making right now. And just, you know, and look,
yeah,
Rich Winner's the representation. Rich has always been a real, like, he drives a hard line and he tries to get the world for his clients and all that type of stuff. And the last time Andrew Mangiapane negotiated a contract while still under team control, he had nothing but leverage coming off a 35 goal season. The two seasons he's had since, obviously that leverage has taken a significant step back and doesn't exist the same way it did. I don't know if you're the Flames, if you can entertain a raise on either a short or a long-term extension for a guy like Mangiapane. He has scored 31 goals combined in the two seasons since he scored 35. And while I think that there was injuries that played into it last season and maybe even a little bit this year, I think we've got a better idea of what Andrew Mangiapane is. I do anyway. I think Andrew Mangiapane is a guy that can always flirt with 20 goals. I think he's got a couple of 20-plus goal seasons left in him. But I think we're talking about a middle six winger who's got great two-way ability and you're comfortable playing him against top players on the other side. There's no question where Mangiapane fits best on this team, and that's on Backlund's wing with Coleman, right? Like, there's no debate right about that. And I think that's how Mangiapane, that's where Mangiapane fits best on any team. And I don't think you can, and I love the player. I really, really do. I just don't know if you're the Flames and where you're going. A guy who just turned 28 years old earlier this month, I don't think that you can go big term with a raise for this player. And if that's what the Mangiapane camp is asking for, which wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, I think you have to entertain a trade even as early as this summer.
Yeah, I don't know how palatable I would be in terms of offering up a raise. He's still quasi-productive. He's still a half-point-per-game player. As you mentioned, you think he can still flirt with 20. I think he's a little bit below that, but I don't think if he ever scored 20 again, it would shock me that he cracks that 20-goal plateau. Having said that, he still has been a member of one of Calgary's most effective lines over the course of the past three seasons, and that can't be overlooked. At the same time, do I think that he can be equally as effective on a different line? And does that sort of hinder the perceived value from an organizational standpoint as well? And say, hypothetically, he and his camp are looking for a raise and you're trying to find a way to get Matt Coronato, for example, into your top nine. As it stands right now with the way the roster is constructed, I think the easiest place to put Matt Coronato, but I can see a scenario where Matt Coronato takes a top nine job at the expense of Andrew Mangiapane.
Well, and I know there are others who aren't big believers in Mangiapane anymore. I still am a huge believer in Mangiapane. But with the parameters that I just put, I don't see Mangiapane being a 35 goal guy again. That was that was a career season.
And they call them career years for a reason.
Exactly. And so, but I still, if the Flames wanted to go down the road of a 4-year contract extension for at a price that reflects what we think his role is best suited for, then all day have at it. But if you're the Mangiapane camp, you're saying, well, this is the first time going into unrestricted free agency. Yeah, we're going to ask for a lot to stay because that opportunity to go choose your spot, that is an enticing option. So it goes back to then if I'm the Flames, I'm like, okay, well, maybe that isn't best for us. Let's explore a trade here. And I think especially with only 1 year left and the Flames, I think will have no problem with all their salary retention spots again, whether it's this summer or into the season. I think Craig Conroy has, from everything I'm led to believe in the trade deadline this year, showed us evidence of it. Craig Conroy's got, like, he's allowed to use salary retention spots. There's no handcuffs on Craig using salary retention. So if you take, if you eat 50% of that 5.8, I think that you would have lots of teams interested in Mangiapane, because what he does, I think, helps in a playoff series with him being a two-way, head-to-head, shutdown winger who can give you some nice secondary offense. And if you're getting that at whatever the 2.75 or whatever, 2.9, I guess it would be, on the on the cap hit, I think there would be a lot of teams that would be interested in going down that road.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, he kind of strikes me as one of those change of scenery breakout players as well. Like, I think if he gets revitalized in a new environment, I can see the scenario where you're like, oh, suddenly he's north of 20 again, and he's floating back around that 50 to 55 point range. And all it takes is one team on the other side to believe in that. And to your point, he's on an expiring contract. So there is very minimal hesitation, at least from my perspective, spending the Calgary Flames money and going, yeah, that's a player that you could retain on. Now, whether or not you're willing to do that, I think varies at what point or what stage of the season you're at, because you might be thinking the same for a potential Kuzmenko deal or a potential another deal, and you don't want to necessarily use a retention slot too early in case that eliminates something you're able to do later in the season. But for me, if I'm the team, that might be an avenue I'm exploring. If I'm the player, free agency might be something I'm exploring as well. As you mentioned, this will be the first time he's an unrestricted free agent.
Let's read some texts at 960-960. This says, not sure what you mean by Mangiapane's camp, but yes, he has an agent, but if a player wants to take less, he will. Doesn't matter what his agent says. Players have final say, believe it or not. Yes, but you do. I'm sure that the player would be okay with trying to get more as well. And I seems like a sarcastic text for the conversation that we're having. Seemed a little unnecessary. This says, what about keeping Andrew and trading him at the deadline? Feels like a player who would pick it up in a contract year. Well, the last time he had a huge season was a contract year.
Funny how that kind of works.
Now, that would, it wouldn't open up flexibility for younger players if you waited until the deadline the same way, but I don't mind that idea. I think if you don't get a ton of great value, if you do look at a trade this summer, I think having him have a nice year or a better year and then seeing what the situation is come the trade deadline, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And whether they're competitive or not at the time, I think you're fine moving that contract out at the deadline in 2025.
The only hesitation I have on that front is if he gets passed by some younger players on the depth chart and gets forced down the list a little bit, and now he's in a situation or a role where he's not as productive as he would be playing alongside a Backlund and a Coleman, for example.
This reads, I'd like to keep Backlund's wing available for Pelche or Coronado. This from Tyler, who says, I was a huge Mangiapane fan. Huge. That's when he was giving 110% every shift before his new contract. Now I'm a huge fan of trading him for anything in return. I just don't like his performance as of late, in my opinion. This says, the Flames need to unload Mangiapane and Duer, put Coronado on the Backlund line. This reads, trade Mangiapane for assets. This says, Matty score sheet or Matt Coronado needs a shot, maybe third line and a little power play time. Great stuff on the text line all day on this Thursday. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's go inside hockey on this Thursday for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Vick's NHL.com colleague from Vancouver, and, of course, from In Goal Magazine, Kevin Woodley joins us, our goaltending expert, as he joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk. Mr. Woodley, how are you, sir?
I'm good. As you can imagine, been a little busy here, not just having the games, but guess what? Goaltending's in the spotlight in Vancouver.
It sure is, and We will definitely get there because the Thatcher Demko situation, one of the biggest stories of the playoffs. So we won't take long to get there. I just, before we get into playoff action and some of your observations on this Canucks-Predators series and some of your observations around the Western Conference, I just wanted to double back on something that we talked a little bit about before. You know, we've talked a lot all season about Dustin Wolf, and Dustin finished his time in the NHL, getting the start on April 18th. 2 days later, he was playing an American League game April 20th in Abbotsford to finish out their regular season. And then a few days later, on Wednesday of this week, he's in Tucson, Arizona, posting a 46-save shutout in Game 1 of a best-of-three series against the Roadrunners. Can you just talk about the adjustments and perhaps the difficulty of going from being in the NHL for as long as he was, jumping right back into the American League, a very different game, and then going out and doing what he did on Wednesday night?
Well, the step back is often difficult for guys, especially when you sort of hit a stage where you think you're ready for the NHL, where you think that's going to be a regular spot. And I know that, you know, even for him in the past couple of years, you know, going down early in the season, you know, there's a mental hurdle to get past. I think in the playoffs, it'd be a little bit different. You know, the fact he got to finish the season with the big club, and it's not so much, like there's no disappointment to get past, and there's no time to get past any, even if there was, cause it's the postseason and those are teammates that, you know, you've counted on and have counted on you all year. So I think mentally it's a much easier transition than it is at other times, for a goalie. I think, read-wise, tactically, that is a big difference. The fact he's been down there, you know, still for a majority of this year, the fact that it's his third year in the league makes it less of a jump, but certainly your timing and your reads are different. It's a league of mistakes quite often compared to the National Hockey League. Guys aren't always where they're supposed to be. They don't always do what they're supposed to do with the puck. And so you sort of have to be prepared. And the irony to me is quite often we hear it's a league where big goalies can get away with things just based on size and sort of needing to be in position and taking up space as opposed to the reactive game. And yet Dustin has clearly thrived in the American League and looked like it again last night. So, you know, good on him for no sort of mental letdown and for being able to sort of make that adjustment quickly.
Kev, this might be a blast from the past for you, but I remember having a conversation with Steve Mason in 2008, 2009. I think he had just been recalled to the Columbus Blue Jackets from the Syracuse Crunch in the AHL. And I kind of asked him, like, this is a pretty seamless adjustment for you. And he goes, oh, it's easier in the NHL because the defensemen do what they're supposed to do. So just going back from the NHL, going to the AHL for Dustin Wolf structurally, and you touched on a little bit, but how much adjusting do you have to do to expect sort of the unexpected because more breakdowns do happen?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, Aaron. It is the breakdowns. And I'll ask you guys a question. Like, I know here in Vancouver, you know, and with a lot of teams, like, the system is the same on purpose, right? They want their players sort of executing in the same way. Is that, you know, I've never asked actually, you know, people on the Rangos, is that the same for Calgary?
Yes,
it is. Yep.
Yeah. So that certainly solves one thing, right? Like, you're right. In terms of where guys are supposed to be, it's the same, you know, how you manage screens, where you're going to pinch a guy, on an odd man rush, where you're going to pressure, where you're going to back off. So there's some individual tendencies within that you have to get used to. But again, the fact that he knows most of those guys and spent a good chunk of the year down there makes it easier. It really is just, you know, that prepared for anything. You know, if a guy's got a puck on a stick and it looks like he's getting out of the zone, do you make sure you stay on that puck and on that play longer than you might in the NHL where, you know, a turnover or a mistake is less likely to happen? I mean, the reality is you should be in the habit of making sure it gets out of the zone before you let up anyways. But the truth is a lot of guys at the NHL level, you just get comfortable to a certain point.
Right.
I don't know that he was up long enough that would have changed. But there's probably little things, little breakdowns, little things that are different that do require you to sort of approach it a bit differently than he was when he was up with the Flames.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley, our goaltending expert. He joins us every Thursday from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. So I just wanted to start there with a little bit on Dustin Wolf. Wranglers can advance to the second round of the Calder Cup playoffs if they beat Tucson in game two of this best of three on Friday. Let's move to the Stanley Cup playoffs, though, Kevin. And, you know, where you're in the belly of the beast. First of all, what do we know and what's kind of the understanding as to how Thatcher Demko left this series against Nashville after game one?
It was a play. This is probably the most heart-wrenching aspect of it. You know, I know there was a replay showed involving a collision. I think it was, I can't remember who it was for Nashville that went crashing into the net. I think it might've been Jeremy Lazan that sort of impacted the left knee. But my understanding is it's actually somewhat of an innocuous play, 48 seconds left, which, you know, again, makes it tougher because the game's already over. Dakota Joshua has already scored into an empty net. A crowd that had been waiting 9 years to see a home playoff game was at a near frenzy. And Jason Zucker comes down the right wing and on his backhand and goes to chuck a puck towards the net and doesn't even get there. And Thatcher does a move that he does, you know, probably 50 times a day in practice, just tucks into his left post, into a reverse VH. And as he goes to exit the post and push across, you can just sort of see him buckle and his head go straight down to the knee. And he's not comfortable at that point. Rick Tocchet said that he was on the ice the next day. And I believe him. That was my understanding too. Like that it was something as they waited for the MRI that he felt good enough that he could go test. But that test did not go well and ended quickly. And so he clearly wasn't comfortable enough to play through it. So, do believe it's the same knee that he injured that forced him to miss the, you know, he's off the ice for 3 weeks, out for five between games. Do believe the reporting and, you know, the Rick Tocchet saying that it's not the same injury, even though it's the same knee, and that can be true. But I'm not entirely sure I believe it's not related, right? Like you don't come off of one and then, you know, have something where the integrity of the joint sort of doesn't hold up to a fairly routine movement that a guy does all the time. And, you know, it's hard to believe that happens without, you know, some type of underlying issue that was related to the recovery process. So, you know, in terms of what that means moving forward, listen, I don't expect to see him. We know we're not going to see him this round. Rick Tocchet, I believe, confirmed that in Nashville today. I don't believe we're going to see him in the next round. And beyond that, who knows? The resilience he showed, the work he put in to get back this first time, you never doubt this guy.
Right.
He was ahead of schedule to make it back for the playoffs. But I'd be surprised if you see him, you know. It feels like the conference finals, you know, a lot of people, I know there's a report today, Rick Dhaliwal here in Vancouver reported the end of the second round is possible. I'd be shocked by that. But again, I've learned not to count Thatcher Demko out.
So knowing all that, Kev, how do we rate Casey DeSmith in game two against Nashville? And how do we handicap Vancouver's chances with DeSmith and Seelovs now being the tandem without Demko in the fold?
Well, statistically, it's not a great night for Casey, right? Like 3-on-15, the underlying, even with the underlying numbers, almost minus 10% in that game. First one hurts him, and it's tough. The crowd's chanting support in the opening minute of the game. It's like a minute 14 in. It was Philip Forsberg throws a puck at the net from the blue line. It looks like it's heading to his back door. And, you know, human nature, you're going to be a little ramped up, a little overeager. You just want to get that first touch in the game. And so he pushes across, slides across, expecting it to get to the back door, and it gets tipped in the high slot the other way. And it looks terrible because it just sort of tumbles into the net, into an empty net. For sure, the slide to his left is early, but what a lot of people didn't realize, even I didn't realize in real time until you heard him talk afterwards, he catches that left edge and he goes to push back across. And Casey's really good at moving on his knees. It's something that other goalies have pointed out to me, like they can't believe how quick he is. He slips out. He loses that edge. He isn't able to grab it fully and isn't able to get across. And I just don't know that you could have script at a worse start than to have such a, you know, such a harmless looking play end up in the back of your net to start the game. Second goal, hard to fault them. That's Philip Forsberg, defenseman on the wrong side of him in the corner, walks out unchecked with the backdoor option. Both defenders go to the backdoor option and basically leave Casey DeSmith mano a mano with a guy who scored 48 in the league this year. And yeah, maybe he got off his short side post a little early, maybe because of the backdoor option, and he roofs it on him. Again, to me, you tip your hat to a Philip Forsberg type. And third one's, you know, a rush chance, which this team has prided itself on not giving up. High shot from the dot and a rebound that Colton Sisson beats Elias Pettersson to. I think it might have even gone in off Elias Pettersson. And that's one where, hey, Casey gives up a lot of rebounds. That's the reality. Stats say it. Eye test tells you there are a lot of second chance opportunities. He's usually really good at keeping that rebound in front of him at least. And that one spilled out a little bit to the side. So that's always been a part of his game. It has been all season. They've done a great job of blocking out second chance opportunities in front of him. And I would suggest they're going to need to, moving forward, to have a chance to continue to do that. As far as can they win it without him, yeah, they did enough good things in that game to score a lot more goals than they did. I mean, 84 shot attempts. I think the Predators blocked 33. But I don't think, well, two things. One, the Preds generated next to nothing. So what happens if they actually start to, you know, open things up and actually generate on the rush or on the power play like they did in the second half of the season? Because we haven't seen either of those things yet in this series. And then at the other end, if the Canucks power play, which, you know, they had three chances in the first period, didn't get a shot, including Pettersson whiffing on a wide open net from the dot. If that can't get untracked and Pettersson can't get untracked, I'm not sure it's going to matter who's in net for the Vancouver Canucks.
Kev, I just want to quickly go back to that first goal that you mentioned and getting scored on during the Let's Go Casey chance. Is that one of the cruelest twists of fate you've witnessed on the goalie front?
It would be the cruelest twist of fate that I had witnessed, Aaron, if not for the earlier description of waiting 9 years for a playoff game, the fans celebrating, and then realizing later that such an innocuous looking play with 48 seconds left of it cost you your star goaltender. That one hurt, but certainly, you know, between those two moments, 48 seconds left in game one and a minute 14 into game two, it was kind of like, here you go. There's 54 years for the what it's like to be a Vancouver Canucks fan here in Vancouver. Not that I'm a fan, but what the fan base experiences. Yeah. This is why everyone here always acts like they're waiting for the other shoe to drop, because inevitably it seems it does.
Yeah, That's a bad 2 minute span. No kidding. No doubt about it. We're chatting with Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine, NHL.com. Just a couple of other observations around the Western Conference playoffs. What are you, 850 save percentage in the first two games for Jake Oettinger? Stars now trail Vegas 2-0 going back to Las Vegas in the 0-2 hole. What are your observations on Jake Oettinger and his seeming struggles?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. When the series was here in Vancouver, and Aaron can attest to this when you're covering the playoffs, it's not just the night of the game. You're often writing deep into the nights on the days off, and so I haven't seen nearly as much as I would like. Planning on tuning into the next one, but statistically, there are two things that jump out at me. Yeah, like his numbers are underwater, adjusted save percentage, but expected save percentage, in the 870s, really low. Giving up more chances than I think they have down the stretch. Like, it's a little looser. And interestingly enough, you know, Vegas on the counterattack and the way they've been able to negate, because I think a lot of people saw this as a slam dunk for the Stars. And I'll be honest with you, I saw them advancing too. And I think we discounted, you know, a couple of things. We all know the storylines with Vegas and the players they have coming back and the pedigree that comes back with them. And I think as much as the focus is on Stone, Pietrangelo having missed the sort of closing stretch for them was a big one as well, and getting him back matters. But this is a Dallas Stars team that, for all the talk about 920 goal scorers, how'd they do it? It was largely off the rush. And rush chances tend to disappear in the postseason. Teams that take them away and have all season tend to have success in the postseason. And Vegas has that in their DNA. Even if they didn't execute it as much or as well in the regular season this year compared to last, they know how to do it when healthy. They did it all during the playoffs last year. And so probably should have, myself included, you know, when I was looking at series and what are the chances, should have factored that in, that Dallas offensively is so reliant on rush and Vegas knows how to take that away. And so far to me, that's, you know, even beyond the goaltending, it's been what each team's been able to generate. That's a big part of that story. And to the point where Logan Thompson's up 2-0 in the series, despite arguably giving up, well, I guess Ilya Samsonov put his name in the hat for it too last night, but, you know, might have been the worst goal of the playoffs with the innocent shot off the wing, basically playing into the net off your own glove.
Yeah. And the last observation and maybe the statistical dive you've done on, have not been a ton of saves in the Oilers-Kings series. Cam Talbot of the Kings started their first two games. Stuart Skinner, of course, getting the starts for Edmonton. 1-1 series tie, heading back to SoCal. What have you made of what you've been able to see of the goaltending performances in this Oilers-Kings series?
Yeah, you know, honestly, like, it's, again, it's like, it's not pretty statistically. And from Skinner's perspective, like, last night was a weird one, right? Like, that one I did get to, that was the first time with the Canucks on the road where I got to sit in, lock down, and watch. And, you know, part of me, like, the numbers, and we said this going into the playoffs, Stuart Skinner will be just fine as long as the Oilers don't start giving up rush chances. And how did most of those goals end up getting scored last night? They're off the rush. And so it would be really easy to say, hey, listen, Skinner off the rush, that's still a weakness, demonstrable statistically. Even after the coaching change, nobody noticed it, though, because they stopped giving up rush chances off the coaching change. But when you look at it, like, the, you know, the sort of, I hate to say fluky, the great play by Byfield, but, like, from an icing to a breakaway as it gets knocked down off the wall for the overtime winner. And Kopitar just picking his spot.
Yep.
Doughty not only getting a breakaway, but then basically the defender trying to come back creates, like, I think Skinner was on the move Doughty was going to make on the breakaway, and the back check broke it up, and it ended up being an accidental five-hole shot. And those goalies will tell you that's the worst. When they think they know where the guy's going, and they were right, and something, the guy either misses his shot, or in this case, the back check pressure causes it to go where the read had you moving away from, and that one looks ugly. So, you know, and the one out of the air by Kempe off a deflection on a lateral pass, yeah, like baseball swing, like, sometimes you just got to tip your hat. But there have been moments at other times in this series where it's hard to ignore the numbers off the rush. And so if the Oilers want to have a long run, I would suggest they get back to what they did during the regular season after the coaching change and don't give those up. So much of, you know, Vegas and Adin Hill last year was, yeah, they gave up high danger chances, but they gave up the high danger chances that Adin Hill was exceptional at stopping, and they didn't give up any of the type that were his biggest weakness.
Right.
And I would suggest that rush chances are something the Oilers are going to need to stop giving up as the playoffs move along. Even if they can maybe get away with it against LA, although they didn't last night, maybe they even get through this series doing it. But long term, that's never a recipe for success, and it definitely isn't when it's the sort of the biggest statistical problem with the guy between the pipes for you. And again, it's relative. It's not a criticism. Everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and for Skinner, there's a lot of strengths, but rush chances aren't one of them.
Well, just as we wrap up with you, Kev, what's your gut telling you as this Vancouver-Nashville series heads back to Nashville for Friday night? What's kind of your read on the Canucks mindset as they roll in for a couple of road games?
You know, I know for sure there was a bunch of "Are you kidding me?" as the team found out, the players found out the fate of their starting goaltender. You know, but I still saw a lot of good things in their game, despite not being able to finish and despite maybe at times playing into how Nashville defended. You know, we've talked a lot this year about how well Vancouver utilizes traffic and tips and shots from the point, and how, you know, a lot of people sort of poo-poo point shots these days, but statistically with the right type of layered screens, you hit the right spot and they become 40% scoring chances. Nashville's done a great job of taking that way. They're fronting the screens and the traffic. They're fronting those point shots because they're not hammers, right? Like, it's not Filip Hronek leaning into one. There's no price to pay. For the 34, 33 block shots that Nashville had, like, if it's Quinn Hughes trying to find lanes and filter pucks through bodies from the point, I'm not saying they don't hurt, but they don't hurt like they would if it was a guy winding up for a 1T, and that's not how the Canucks operate. Out of those 33, 34 block shots, only once did I see it was Ryan McDonagh on the power play, a Predator actually getting up sort of slowly, gingerly, having to shake something off as he went to the bench. So they're going to have to find a way around that, whether that's working the puck down low and attacking from angles or even throwing pucks off the end boards. And like I said earlier, if the power play doesn't get going, I don't have a good sense. But this team is one where it's been easy to count them out at several times along the way this season. And every time you're ready to, they show you that they've matured. This will be the biggest test of all. Have they matured? Can they make adjustments in their game without the number one goaltender behind them? Or does this end up being a shorter playoff run than anyone had envisioned?
Great stuff, Kev. As always, enjoy the rest of this series between the Canucks and the Predators. We'll be even deeper into the playoffs when we chat next week. Great stuff, as always. Thank you for the time, hey?
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. And by next week, I'll give you have a better handle on all the other goalies that are playing in the playoffs than I did today. I promise.
Great stuff, as always. Thanks, Kev. Kevin Woodley,
In
Goal Magazine and NHL.com out of Vancouver, joining us inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Calgary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today. As we start to wrap up this hour, Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Have a good rest of your Thursday. Talk to you on Friday's program.
Sounds like a plan to me, buddy.
Thanks to Cam. Thanks to Shan, our producers, this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.